This is season two. I love the way that rhymes. Nerds, jocks, and preppies. I am 8th Dan Stan Adu, and I am so happy to be here with you. Wow, there's just so much rhyming going on. This is fantastic. All right, I am joined by my good buddy Jim. How you doing, Jim?
I am thrilled to be here to talk about this the next flick in this great season of B-movies.
Oh yeah, that flick is The Big Bet. All right, moving on. We got Blackjack.
Sup, darlings?
Darlings. Ooh, interesting. And finally, we round out with Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations from the great Nick Boxer. I am slightly less thrilled to be here.
Wow. That's a shame that Brad can't make us. He's hanging around in Sacramento, California this evening, and so he will not be able to find time to join us. Too bad, because he's going to miss out on talking about The Big Bet. So, Nick Boxer, why don't you fill us in on The Big Bet?
First, I'd like to preface this by saying nothing in this movie is okay. that consent was not given. The plot. Our star, Chris, he's horny. Do I need to elaborate in any way?
He really is.
That's true. Boy, is he ever.
That's what goes on. Chris, he's horny. He wants to get laid any which way he can. And he makes a bet at school lay the new girl, but
his car against another guy's car. I think that's important.
But you think it's important? Really? I didn't think the film filmmakers thought it was important in the least. Because there's as much as him in trying to get laid by other people than he is trying to get laid by this one girl. That's the movie. It's just vignettes of him trying to get laid. That's all that happens.
You're making this sound like a bad thing.
Well, it would be a good thing if any of it was consensual, and it's not.
Wait. I don't know. I mean, we'll get
absolutely
there.
Absolutely consensual.
It's consensual, but it's a bit of Aziz Ansari. It is. This is the highest pressure. From the hero of the piece, this is the highest pressure to have sex I've ever seen in a film. He is just he is almost to the level of, it's my doctor said it's unsafe for me to go any too long without having had sex because it could injure me. Like, it's really at that kind of level.
Now, in fairness, I was talking to my wife earlier, my wife Shanna, about this, and
her last name?
Adu.
Shanadu?
Yep. Okay. And so anyways, the thing that we were discussing was this concept of consent and stuff like that. And she brought up a really interesting point to me, which was the idea of you really have to look at these movies with the proper lens. You can't look at it and just be like, oh, this is a terrible movie and, I can't accept it because there's so much bad stuff. It's just like, there's bad stuff in any 80s movies generally because of the time, and I mean, most of this stuff is essentially satirical in its own way. So I appreciated that, coming from a woman and being able to understand that it's just like, we're not condoning.
Wait,
what they
your
do.
Wife is a woman?
Yes. Oddly, that's the way it works in this case. And so I just appreciated the fact of, that's absolutely right. We should be looking at it almost as satire, and that, just appreciate the lens in which it was given to us.
And the sex with the older woman, it was consensual.
Absolutely.
Fully consensual. I don't know that it's still right, but legal, but it was consensual.
I don't know what, well, who knows?
He wasn't 18. It was not consensual.
Yeah.
We don't know what state he's in. That does matter. Depending on what state he's in, did they say that he's not 18? I mean, he does have his own car and everything.
He's 17.
Okay. Yeah.
It's all close enough, you know.
That's what I say.
It's not the kind of thing that anybody. I mean, any.
If there's crash on the playing field,
she's not his teacher. if she's not his teacher or something, though, she's his neighbor. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants her to be his teacher.
Yes, he does.
That's awesome. Yeah. He meets the new woman across the street, and he helps her out with some plumbing. He's the worst plumber in the history of plumbing. He makes the drainage pipe. On a sink, spray water, which is a really amazing feat.
And it's excellent because he's not even loosening it. When he's just kind of
knocking against the pipe. and then he asks her to be his sex mentor. Because he thinks that he could probably win over the new girl if he just got some coaching from an older, more experienced woman.
Now, I did not get that at all. That actually explains a thing or two.
Wow.
Jack, do you have a nerd alert here? Because I actually do have a nerd alert, but it's yours if you got one about the neighbor lady.
Other than the obvious, go ahead.
So the actress who plays her, I don't have it in front of me.
Sylvia Kristel.
Yes, she might be well known to fans of B movies. She was the star of the Emmanuel series of French softcore porn films.
Yes,
very, very popular.
Which is fantastic. Like honestly, that when I found out that made kind of made my day as far as this movie goes. Because
when I said the obvious, that's what I meant.
Yes. I mean,
I thought that was actually one of the selling points that everybody knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. This is because this has a couple of people. One of the things that really struck me about this movie, above a lot of them, is how beautiful the women were in this. You know, these were some gorgeous women that were getting naked and it was like, wow, there's high quality boobies.
And at this point, I'd like to say that when we said that it's posted, there is on YouTube a short version. There's like 75 minutes without the nudity. And then there's like almost a half hour of nudity version. That's like 140 minutes. You definitely want that one.
Yeah. Make sure. Yeah.
Well, and so this brings me to one of those great points, because there is a love scene. Well, the love scene between, he finally convinces her, well, I guess wins her over. He seems to do a lot of winning over of people, and he's a fairly likable character. I mean, I
would call it begging, but...
Yeah, okay, begging.
But high pressure. A little high pressure.
A little bit of manipulation and some lying, sure.
There's a little bit of everything in this, but there's this love scene, and what struck me is it's very obviously a VHS copy that somebody has ripped. So I mean, there's a lot of scan lines, but when it comes to this love scene, I'm watching it, and there's the love scene, and the scan lines just start going crazy, and I'm like, somebody watched this fucker a lot.
Yeah. All the nude scenes, I notice extra scan lines, which is a real inconvenience, but it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's very obvious why people were watching this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think the thing that struck me about this is that there were huge sections of the movie where I was, because I kind of likened this to that definition of insanity, where it's just like, you know, it fails one time, so you keep doing it over and over again in hopes of a different outcome. And I mean, he eventually got it, but like, it just seemed like so much of the movie was like him just doing the exact same thing over and over again, over and over. So I found myself getting a little bored in those moments, but then out of nowhere, again, there'll just be these completely offhand moments where it almost felt vaudevillian in the way they treated it. And it would just be something completely slapstick humor just dropped into it. And I'm like, what? Why did you choose to do that?
There are really weird tonal shifts as you go through this movie. Like there's times that it is slapstick. There's times that it's a very earnest kind of romantic story. And then there's times where it's like a very special episode of Blossom. where like he's on the beach and he's and the music is swelling and he's staring off being very thoughtful and then like for like no reason and and he's analyzing his life and he's come to this realization, which is again, as you say, go back and try exactly the same thing again.
There's so many right now. This guy is amazing though to me because if I was 14 or even 17, he would have been my hero. If you think about it, like he's the guy who walks up to this new girl who's extremely hot, and he walks up to her and he just starts chatting her up and he's got a date with her that night. And then it's just like, so they're on their first date, and it's just like, so what would you like to do? I'd kind of like to watch a movie. And he's like, oh, I got a great idea, baby. And then he takes her to, like, make out, you know, rock or whatever, and they're fucking necking, you know? And I'm like, dude, you move really fast.
Yeah, they're necking. But then you got to understand, from there it goes to they're necking, then all of a sudden they're talking. And she's sitting there going, you know, I don't know if I'm comfortable with this. And he's like, I'm not going to pressure you to do anything. And then somehow the next sentence is something about how if we use protection, it's okay. And she and there's no logical progression in the dialogue.
Well, and that's the very special episode part of like where she says, well, I don't want to get pregnant. And he explains contraception to her. it's such an earnest movie at times.
Like, well, now I will throw that sort of pays off in the end, that whole scene.
Oh, it
during the credits, right. It's unbelievable. Yeah,
and I'm gonna
to be there.
I gotta talk about that, and I will talk about that in a moment. But you know, like this is the same guy. So not only does he manage to do this, and I mean. But then he's managed to get this neighbor who who gets undressed and like you know changes seductively a lot and allows him to see. But then he's still like, I mean, at no point when I was 17 did I have a hot neighbor that I could walk out and be like, hey, your car isn't working. Do you want to go for lunch with me? Oh, okay, after lunch, we're going to go for a walk on the beach, and I'm going to hold your hand.
They hold hands. That's amazing.
I mean, it's like, wow, dude, you are the man.
Okay, yeah,
I know. Did you also mention that he's stalking her at the same time? Like,
I have
sneaking into her house and shit?
I have a question about that scene, and I really want a ruling from the judges here. Okay, so he's constantly being a peeping Tom with his hot neighbor across the street. His bedroom faces hers. She sleeps in the nude with the drapes open. So repeatedly through the movie, he's spying on her. So he's once again with his binoculars spying on her. And then she goes out to her car and the car just doesn't start. It just like rah, 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 won't turn over. And he runs outside and offers her a ride.
Pretty good imitation of a car.
Did he sabotage her car? That's my question.
100% yes.
I'm going to go with
that. I didn't even think it was subtext there.
Anyone think it's coincidence? Like,
no.
I can't think so. I just can't think so. There's too many examples of him being like a weirdo who's pushing like so hard. Like, because the crazy thing for me is that the way this guy acts, I mean, he acts like, again, he acts like this when he's with women. He seems like he's really good sometimes, but then he's really awful sometimes.
But you have to remember, like, the opening of the movie explains his, that he discovers as a very young child, basically sex, and that he's a sex horny as a child, doing things he can to look up women's skirts as a kid, has sex very early. They establish that he's like 14 or whatever, and then he's in a dry spell now, but that he has had sex in the past, but now he's in this dry spell, and the other kids in the school that he makes the bet with and everybody keeps on talking about how he's a virgin, doesn't know anything with women. Meanwhile, he's walking up to the most beautiful woman you've ever seen in your entire life, and immediately getting her number and her to go on a date with him and everything. Like, it's essentially
his girlfriend from the time he asks her out.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely. and now here's one of those things. So now the basis behind the Like, so they make the bet. And then to hedge his bets, the bad guy, the evil guy, Norman. So the bad guy, he goes up, he finds out this information that she got kicked out of her last school because she wandered into an orgy in the bathroom and was blamed for being part of the orgy. I mean, it
logical.
Yeah, completely logical. And so he goes up to her and like, so at the beginning of the movie, he's like, oh man, she's totally mine, dude. She's totally mine. And then he goes up and essentially blackmails her and says, you better not sleep with this guy for the next week or else I am totally
10 days.
Yeah, 10 days. Yeah, or else I am totally going to tell everybody that you are, you know, that this is what happened. And he completely, at that moment, shot down any chance he could ever have of, like, getting her, I would assume.
I would hope.
Yeah.
I had no idea what his plan was.
No,
really,
I didn't either. Other than just getting the car. That was all he seemed to care about. He talked about wanting sex, but I actually don't think he wanted sex at all. I just think he wanted the car.
It was a nice car.
It wasn't it. It was a very nice car. There's no question about
and
it.
And is that, like, such a huge ask? I know they don't know each other, but don't sleep with this. Asking a teenage girl not to sleep with a guy for a week.
I want to clarify.
Doesn't sound like a huge ask.
I want to clarify the time period of the bet, because it's mentioned several times and it made me laugh every single time. It just stuck with me. He doesn't say a week. It does not say 10 days. He says the actual period of the bet is a week from Saturday at midnight.
Good point.
That's right. We just assume
which
that
is so ridiculously specific.
And like, oh yeah, because there's this really dorky friend that he's got who is the guy who gives Norman the information. And the guy, the dorky friend, is at the beginning hanging out with Norman and his cronies kind of thing. And you're like, oh, so he's a buddy of them. No, he's actually a buddy of Chris. but you don't understand that. And that actually winds up leading to one of the really fucked up moments in the movie when he's just like pointing in this porn magazine to like, oh, what was it called, like Fantasy Haven or something like that. And
I can't remember. That's a wacky part of the whole movie. Yeah,
yes.
This place where you can go and your sexual horizons will be broadened if you go to this.
And I love the way it sets it up. So like, you know, he throws the magazine away, like, oh, this is gonna rot your brain, and then he pops out of the school again and grabs the magazine and is like, oh yeah, you know what he's gonna do.
The biggest porn dog you've ever seen in your life is telling this other guy, you don't want to look at naked women.
and so then he goes to this place and he's met by the attractive Asian receptionist who immediately
That scene's incredible.
Oh yeah, who immediately starts taking his clothes off. There's so many women that
she's just the receptionist. She lets everybody know that.
That's right.
Just the receptionist.
This guy gets his clothes taken off by so many women in this movie. It is absolutely amazing. I could have we could have set up a modifier for that. But
well, he keeps having this. I want to clarify for the listener who may not have seen this movie. They should see this movie.
Yes.
That he keeps having dream sequences throughout the movie. So there's like, he has flashbacks at the early of his sexual experience, but he also has a dream where he has sex with several different, with a neighbor lady and another woman who looks a lot like Dano Plato.
It's the mother and her daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the daughter. Okay.
Yeah. So it's the neighbors. Yeah. It's like the neighbors on to the side of their house as opposed to his
other neighbor that he's.
Yeah. The neighbor across the street. Yeah.
Yeah. What happens is the guy goes out and he's like, hey, can you keep watch on my family while I'm on my business trip? And he's just like, hey. And then he goes in and like the the guy's wife is like, "You're late," and he's like, "Oh, you know." And then of course they screw, and then he goes into the other room, and the daughter's there, and they screw, and he goes back, and then he goes back to his newspaper.
But he's like kind of pissed off that he's constantly having to screw these women. Like he's like, no. "Oh, this is exhausting." Like he's like, "Oh no, I got to go into this other room and do this again."
Well, it's great though because so they do that. He does this, and then of course you realize it's a dream sequence, and then like you know. 15, 20 minutes later, it happens again, and you're like, "What the hell
exactly
are they doing?"
The same dream
but it's in, it's sped up.
Not that much film.
And then it happens a third time, and he's just going back and forth between the rooms, and I'm like, "Dude, yeah, this guy really is a stud." but when it comes down to this, like fantasy haven or whatever. Like, so he gets, so the receptionist takes off his clothes, gives him his towel, walks him out, and there he is, and he looks around, and it's all guys. And she's like, "Oh, you're going to enjoy this, you know?" And then he gets basically somewhat accosted by a couple of
extremely stereotypical homosexual individuals, yeah.
Yeah.
The predatory gaze. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
I can't believe we haven't mentioned the pink towels. I mean, he walks into a group of naked men, all obviously enjoying each other's company. There's like 300 of them, and they all have the same pink towel tied around their waist.
Well, I mean, they bought in bulk, right?
I just couldn't believe how many pink towels they had. No one brought their own from home. No one would. I'm pretty sure there was guys in the pool wearing the pink towel. It was like, "Oh, you know, we're gay, but we don't want to flaunt our stuff at this nudist college. We're all going to wear this towel exactly the same way." It took me out of the film. It was like really weird. Like,
that's what took you out of the film.
It was really weird.
This far, no farther.
It was just weird.
The line must be drawn here.
Oh yeah, but
now,
yeah.
I hate to backtrack, but I actually, you guys explained something to me, and now I got confused again. Now you said Chris had been laid before, that he was a stud. Are you referring to that beginning montage where the first words were "the first was my mother"?
Yes. That is. But later on, it's not his mother. Thank God.
Yeah, but you're right. He does named Sissy. That.
It's like an older babysitter. He talks about. Yeah. He says he was 14 and she was 21. Because you know he's a loser. He can't get women.
I kind of thought that was like his masturbation montage, not. An actual account of the event.
And that would make sense, but that's not the way they explain it.
You know, it certainly isn't.
And that was what confused me, of course, too. But the way they explain it is that he was quite the old horn dog when he was 14 years old and 8 or whatever. And then of course he's a disaster theoretically with women. Later when he's 17 years old, but goddamn, that fella's horny. I mean, I suppose any of us were at 17, but
exactly. I'm like, dude, he was 17. Of course he was horny.
there's so many moments in this where he breaks into fantasy that it's really...
I sometimes have trouble telling if it was fantasy or not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
The elevator scene.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Like extraordinarily beautiful woman in the elevator. I'm not sure if he stopped the elevator tried to stop the elevator or if it just stopped on its own, you know,
he stopped it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the air conditioning stops and it's just like, "Oh, I guess we better get naked." And then, you know, like, so they're screwing in the elevator, but then of course the elevator starts up and it gets down and you look and there he is, like basically humping and kissing the ground of the elevator. There's no hot woman in there. But the thing that I love about that scene is that led to him bringing this girl, Beth, with him to the same elevator and trying to stop the elevator and make sure that she would try to screw him like his fantasy in the elevator.
Yeah, this, like, he's trying to learn the move that will get into her pants, and and his idea is, well, if I learn anything from this dream I just had, it's that this will work.
It has to work better than Victorian porn.
Well, that scene is so, that's so great, you know, like, I mean, he goes to the porn shop because he sees a sign that says, hey, you want to attract your lady? Well, show her some porn. Naturally, right? And so then I don't know what made him choose, you know, like, my sister's whatever it's called, the Victorian porn. And he goes into the back room.
Yeah, the 17-year-old kid just walks into this porn shop, walks all around it, looking at all this porn. Nobody kicks him out. Then he rents it, no problem.
Well, because he goes into the back room to start watching it, which is, you know, what an awesome porn shop where for 25 cents you can watch, you can sit there with a VHS machine and watch some porn in a solitary room. But
that's the good old days.
And he watches it, and so yeah, it starts out Victorian. The girl takes 40 minutes to take off her clothes because she's got her fucking, you know, like, all the extra accoutrement. And so then finally she gets naked. Again, very attractive woman. Gets into a bath that's supposed to have water in it, which I'm convinced doesn't have any water in it. And then it cuts to this little boy looking in, at least, you know, I think like 13-year-old boy. And then that transitions to it being him looking in, and the girl, the Victorian girl, is Beth taking off her clothes. And so then he's like, oh man, this is the fucking movie for me. And then he takes it back home and he's like, oh, Beth, come on. My parents are going to be home soon, but you got to watch this. And he puts it in the VHS machine and he starts playing it. We go through all this and she's got that, oh my, what are you trying to do? I know what you're trying to do. But, you know, and then finally it comes to this, oh, you're going to love this part. And then the VHS kicks out at that point and it fucks up. But I'm like, when he says, you're going to love this part, I'm like, dude, did you think that on the VHS tape it was going to be you and Beth, like, magically on there? Like, because if so, if not, I'd love to know what you think she was suddenly going to love about this girl getting into a bathtub with no water. Like, what about that is like, ooh, this is fucking hot shit.
How kid ever got a second date with her, I'll never know.
Yeah, that's especially...
Because he seems to piss her off every day.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, you know, her father is a minister. Yeah. And so there's a few points scattered about in this movie where that actually kind of comes up. But it's not the kind of thing that ever comes up enough to make it make sense in the movie. It's really more like, hey, let's put this in, let's toss this in, it'll be great.
That's every scene in the movie.
Yeah. Oh no.
You can't be like there's just suddenly they started just throwing shit in. That's every scene in the movie.
So I like, this is so when it finally comes down to the end and she's like, you know, he's admitted that he made a bet, which of course pissed her off, and she is about to tell him why. You know, why she's being blackmailed, which she never comes out with. And she never, but she's, it's, there's so this
she never,
moment.
She never tells him?
I don't think so.
I thought she did.
I think she tells him that something happened, but not that she's given him the blue balls because of this.
Yeah.
Like, he's, it's like halfway toward it.
But there's this moment where after that happens and she's like all pissed off at him and he's all pissed off with her because she won't put out. And so he drives away in the car and he goes down and he's driving past the beach and he's just like, fuck. And then he turns around And then the next thing you know, he's driving back and it's nighttime. And I'm like, where the hell were you going that now you're driving back into the city? You know, and it's nighttime.
He had to go somewhere and stare off into the distance. That's what he needed to get done.
Yeah, exactly.
He needs some good, good solid staring in the distance.
The first probably 20 minutes of this movie, I was like, oh, we fucked up on this one. We picked a teen sex drama instead of a teen sex comedy.
It is,
because there is a lot of those. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just so boring in these moments where you're just like, oh, man, these people aren't good enough to pull off like this drama.
That's for damn sure.
But
there's one great line there at the beginning when he's having his dream sequence. The dream dialogue that happens while he's having dream sex. One of the girls says, how can a man be so desirable?
I'll tell you how, because it happens when he finally does get to have sex with Beth. He makes himself so desirable.
Spoiler alert.
He makes himself
the weirdest
Yes.
Actually, of all of the crazy plans he had to seduce her, when they actually have sex, it's weirder than all of those.
No, like he goes like so the car pulls up next to one of those flashing lights that's on top of one of the construction sawhorses.
Like a warning light, yeah.
Yeah, and so he pulls this warning light off, and I'm like, are you going to try to fake being a cop or something like that? You know, you're going to fucking Starsky and Hutch it on top of your convertible? But no, so he takes this light, and which I'm not sure how, like, apparently it's battery operated, which is seems really inconvenient. That makes sense. But anyway, so then he goes to her house, and it's just like, hey, baby, hold on, I need to go to the garage for a second. Okay. So he goes to the garage and, like, flips the breaker, turns off the lights, and then he turns this light on. And so it's kind of flashing around in this orange, bathing the room in this orange glow.
It's such a weird choice.
And then they proceed to do, she proceeds to do like a striptease, like, oh, you didn't even have to do this for me. I would have done it anyways. Because by now she's realized, because there is a scene that happens just before this where Norman, who is a black belt in two forms of unnamed martial arts, played by Ron Thomas, I might add, who's from The Karate Kid, you know, another person from The Karate Kid in one of our movies. But so Norman, you know, is like, all karate man, like, this could have been in like White Dragon season one, you know, and like he's whipping around, and then Chris just like kind of walks up to him and like pops him in the chin and knocks him out, like. And,
oh,
and
yeah, but it's not like a good punch. Like, no. If you were to throw a fake punch that didn't hit somebody and looked like it hurt, like if you're like a kid and this is like kids are pretending to play fight, that's this punch.
Yeah.
It looked terrible.
It was awful. But she's like, you know, it cuts back to her and she's got this look on her face like, oh, I don't know. And then he punches him out and she smiles and it's just like, oh, okay. And then by the end, you realize, like, that was exactly the moment that sold it for her. Like, yep, dude punched out this guy. So, fuck, he's
Well, hot. He stood up for her, yep. You know, because he, he stood up for her when she was, you know, this guy was blackmailing her,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
So, yeah, but, totally logical.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah,
totally.
So they have sex in this with this, you know, orange glow surrounding them. And that's... You know, I think, and that is the end of the movie. Like, that is the direct end of the movie. There isn't
That's
like,
not the end of the
movie. No. I mean, there's the credit point. I'm going to get to the credits. Believe you me, I can't let the credit part go. But like, there's no going back and like wrapping up the Norman thing with the car. And hey, maybe it was for the best that they didn't. The movie was already a little long, anyways. But. Yeah, then when the credits start to roll and they start showing pictures of them together, you know, Chris and Beth together, and then one of the pictures, I'm like, is she pregnant?
And then, uh-huh.
And then
the weirdest choice in a teen comedy ever.
Absolutely.
Hey, this hot chick you were just beaten off to, she's pregnant now.
And then you move And then you move next. And because earlier in the story, she had talked about how her mother had her when she was 16. Don't know whether that was the truth or a lie. But hey, you know, history repeats itself. It looks like, but...
Wait, they graduate high school before she's pregnant.
Oh,
They make that clear. They show their graduation photo.
That's true. That's
right. Then
that's
they're
true.
Pregnant.
Good point. Okay. So we assume they get pregnant.
Yeah, otherwise it'd be weird.
I would have considered, you know, if it was me doing it, I would have considered Mary showing a marriage photo. You know, I mean, it is the 80s after all. But then, so yeah, okay, we establish that she's pregnant because the next one, she's very obviously pregnant. And then that jumps not to a baby, but no, like a fucking 8-year-old. He's holding like this 8-year-old up.
And they, of course, look exactly the same as they do in the rest of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like doing their family things. And I'm like, wow, these leaps that you're taking are just amazing.
So, and yeah, awesome. I wanted to know, because the story in the credits follows basically the story of her mother, who got pregnant at 16 and had the kid and ended up a prostitute. Yeah. I was actually wondering if there was one slide at the end of the credits that we missed of her street walking, because this life that they've set out for Chris in the credits looked so horrible that I'm sure he left her immediately.
Well, no, because he had an 8-year-old, so they were obviously at least together for 10 years or so. Yeah.
All right, are we ready to move into scoring?
We are ready to move into scoring.
Hell yes.
Yeah, I don't think Stan's left anything for us, so let's move into the scoring.
All right. Stan really had a connection with this film, didn't he?
No kidding.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the scores that Stan brings to this, because he definitely brings a passion to it. So yeah. We rate these. We are on the search for the ultimate B-movie. We rate each of these films in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category that we go to is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
See, this is the really funny part, is that, you know, you talk about this, and right away after I watch the movie, I'm like, oh, I can't give this a high Schlock Appeal mark. It's only a 2 for me, you know, but then we started talking about it, and I realized that it's just like, well, yeah, it's not so much the first 45 minutes of the movie. The first 45 minutes I find really kind of tedious. It's maybe the last 45 minutes that it just, once it kicks into gear, there's so much absolute ridiculousness going on that, you know, it is crazy, and I do appreciate that part, but I'm going to give it a 6.
All right.
Wow. Schlock Appeal. 4. I didn't think it was that schlocky. You could have No, you could have marketed this under generic softcore porn. Nothing crazy is going on.
Movie that we did? Just
nothing crazy is going on.
No. Sorry. In the, like, when you're pitching this movie, it's like, oh, this kid needs to get laid, and there's a bet.
Yeah, but that's not this category.
No.
No, I'm having trouble explaining. I just...
Just give it a score. Move on.
I did. I said 4, and you started arguing.
Jack, what do you give it?
Okay, so I give it a 5.
All right.
Point you're arguing over?
But I'm not saying why it's a 5 wrong. I just said it's a 5 and we're done. Move on.
I thought it was a bit schlockier than the rest of you. I think it's the way that they get to the nudity quite a few times is kind of hilarious to me, because there's nothing organic and necessary to the plot about the nudity in pretty much any point. So I'm going to give this a 7.
Yeah, it does a beautiful job of that, of just like, I think it's time to add more nudity. How do we do that? Well, let's do this.
Has the most nudity of a film of this season, without any question, and the most graphic nudity, mm-hmm. And since it's probably equivalent, maybe even a little more, I think, than Raw Force in season one.
It's pretty close, but the extra, like the jamming in of extra nudity, because when he's having his flashback to his earlier sexual experiences, two of those women are just photographs that they've put into the movie. They're not even a scene,
but they're new photographs at least, you know. And that's a good add on.
Well, let's move into more heart than budget right away, and so Stan can keep moving along here.
Well, in all fairness, this one, I'm going really low here. This didn't feel like there was a lot of heart with the budget. It felt a little budgety, but I really, other than like the weird shit, it didn't feel right in that case for me. So I'm only going with a two.
No, I'm going with two as well. This is the second to last movie of the great Burt I. Gordon. And I was disappointed. This is a director at the end of his career, just trying to get another paycheck. And he had to phone over to China to do it. It's sad.
But apparently, he made his best movie in 1995, according to him.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Like, there's this huge gap. There's this movie, and then there's another movie, and then in like 1995, after like 14 years, he comes back and makes another movie or whatever. It's like,
I really wanted to like this film because Burt I. Gordon is a great director.
Relatively
speaking, right?
you watch The Spider. I mean, that is just an entertainment film. Land of the Giants is a great film. Empire of the Ants is a terrible film, but on this podcast, we'd love it.
and we will be talking more Burt I. Gordon in the future.
I'm sure we will.
Guarantee that. But, and I want to buy his autobiography. Boy, do I ever.
This is not a great effort by him. So yeah, I'm not giving any higher than that too.
Although I do have one little note about Burt I. Gordon. As I was looking through some of his sex comedies, because he's got a couple of other sex comedies, and one of them is about a guy who won't have a relationship with a woman because he wants his mother. And I'm like, wow, that's like brought up in this, you know, loosely in this movie. And then also there's this other one where this guy can't have a regular sexual life, from what I understand, because he has too many fantasies. And I'm like, wow, Burt I. Gordon definitely had some concepts that he wanted to get out for his sex comedies.
His sex, they definitely have a lane.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
Jack?
You know, I'm going to give this a five because I think that they, number one, they did manage to get a pretty good cast. And I do think that they were trying really, really hard. And they're trying to make it more than just a sex comedy. They're trying to give it that heart, that life lessons and all this different stuff. They just don't have the competence to do it properly. So I'll give it a five.
I got no life lessons from this movie.
it felt like I was about to get the more you know, swoosh across the screen. I also gave it a five. I think it kind of draws a run down the middle of the road as far as heart versus budget. Next category is what we call the WTF moments, Stan.
Well, I mean, obviously, I know I broke down a lot of those WTF moments throughout. I mean,
did you?
Oh God!
I'm gonna just go for myself. I'm gonna go with like most of the fantasy scenes because most of those really stood out for me as being completely nonsensical within the context of the movie. I'm gonna go with, but I'm still gonna go middle of the road because there's a lot of tedious story to wade through here. So I'm gonna go five.
I'm going with six for the end credits. My favorite scene, the end credits, not because the movie was ending, but because they were just so wacky.
I got nine on this because once again, it's one of those movies where they obviously were like, just come up with something for to fill 10 minutes. Or, you know, just throw a bunch in there. There's so many WTFs in this. How about the time when he's looking
at the... But did they make the movie stronger?
Yes! How about...
I do not think the WTFs in this movie made the movie stronger.
Yeah, you already given your score. The binoculars, he's looking at the binoculars. He drops them in his aquarium.
Yes.
He picks them up and shakes them off the water. Goes to look at Sylvia Crystal nude again, and a fish floats across the screen that's now inside his binoculars. What the fuck? What? There's so many of these. Every time that they tried to do comedy, that's where they absolutely failed. Like, they had no idea of timing or jokes. It was just things like, hey, okay, he's going to get into her house because her door will be open. He'll go upstairs. She'll be in the shower. Then she'll get out of the shower. So he'll hide behind this, a chaise lounge. Okay, so he's going to hide behind this chaise lounge. Then he's going to pull it slowly, and she's going to be toweling herself off. And every time she looks up, it'll be closer to the door. Then it'll be out the door. And then he'll act like he just came inside. And he'll be like, hey, is anybody home? And she'll come downstairs. And the chaise lounge will now be outside her bedroom in the hallway. She'll go, hey, something weird just happened. And he'll go, oh, really? Can you help me with a problem? And she'll go, okay, and we'll move on.
and don't forget, there is that moment at the end, too, after he's bedded her, and he goes under to thank the pipe. And he's just like, oh, thank you so much for getting me this. And the pipe just sprays out at him as he's talking
It's like, I think you need to call a plumber. Yeah. It's not funny at all, which is makes it hilarious. They fail so epically. He's sitting there with that hot chick in the elevator, and he's making out with her, and then the elevator opens, and it's all these elevators. It's like 8 elevators, but every person in the hallway, there's like 12 people who want to get on only that elevator who are staring in there. Now he's lying on the ground, kissing the ground, and they're all making fun of him. Hilarious. So then he'll take the chick, and he'll be able to press the button, and the exact same thing that was in his dream will happen. He'll rig the elevator. I don't know how. He doesn't have the skills to, but we'll just do it. He'll rig the elevator. It'll go off. He'll be sitting there making out with her, and hey, we'll have the lights go off, and then he'll pretend to throw up. Hilarity ensues. Fucking terrible. So funny, because it's so not funny. This thing is loaded with these WTFs. Out the door. A 9, a solid 9, almost a 10.
All right. Well, there's the passion that we were talking about earlier. I do love the fish in the binoculars was brilliant.
I love, she, the
neighbor comes downstairs and she's very confused. And she says, my chair's in the hallway. And he says, that is very strange. I'm going with a 6. It's not the craziest thing we've seen, but there's some fun stuff in this.
Yeah, he totally no-sold that chair.
All right.
She's not like...
she just accepts that, probably ghosts. That's... I don't know, it's new. Maybe the house is settling.
It's like, she's like, well, I do leave my door unlocked all the time, so...
I couldn't see anybody staring at me. After all, they all know that I apparently, even though I say I'm a fashion designer, apparently I never work because I'm always home.
Reason. Never overburdened by clothing.
Because Chris almost never goes to school, so it's okay.
All right, into the next category we call memorable moments. Stan.
You know, I know there's going to be a few things that I think of from this movie. I don't know what they are right now, though. There's a bunch of things that are in my head right now that I think could be memorable moments. But in a month, I could be like, oh, I think something happened, but I can't remember. So I'm just going to go with a 4 on a kind of a blanket memorable moment.
I'm just going to give it a 3. I don't think anything from this film is going to stick with me.
You know what? I'm giving it a 5. And it has some of those, like, I think a lot of the, it's a lot of the things you will remember, like the different nude scenes. I think the nude scenes you'll remember. I think they're pretty memorable. But the other thing is that this thing has that I actually insulted our last movie for Preppies was this thing has a killer soundtrack. Like it seriously has a great 80s soundtrack. And I could listen to this music anytime.
I'm also going to go with a 4. I think there's an earnestness to this that I do like. It's just, it takes itself, at times it's ludicrous and at times it takes itself really seriously. And there's an interesting feel to the whole thing. And I do think I actually never going to forget A Week from Saturday at Midnight. I want to structure my entire life around that now. All of my due dates will be A Week from Friday at Midnight, A Week from Thursday at Midnight.
That's a great idea.
It is a great idea.
All right. I gave it a 4. We're rolling on to our last category, which is called the crazy concept.
Yeah, as far as a concept goes, the fact of guys at school and a bet and to lay a girl, again, that by itself is not a crazy concept. The crazy, much like Preppies, the crazy gets laid in over top of this. So I am just going to go with a 3. But Chris is a more likable, and versus Preppies, I will say, Chris is a much more likable hero than anybody in Preppies was.
This is a tough one. I'm not going high. I'm just going to say 3. It's not way out there. I don't think on the page it was way out there. So, 3. I'm done.
Okay, I got a 5. I think it's. I think when you throw in the older woman with the younger woman, with the bet, with the dreams and the hornet, I think when you throw it in, it's all like what would have been part of the pitch, and it's all such a mishmash. It's not one thing. Like Preppies is one thing. This is a bunch of things. They're not terribly original, but there's a whole bunch of them. So I think a 5.
All right, I'm also only going to go with a 3 here. I'm pretty sure that Patrick Dempsey was in this movie already. I think there's another. It feels like there's another movie exactly like this. All right, so that brings us to the end of the.
I think
scoring.
This would have been first.
Probably the Patrick Dempsey. It's probably a lot of movies copying The Big Bet.
A lot of them. It's understandable.
So every season we have 6 secret modifiers. 3 that can add a point, 3 that can subtract a point. This one was a tough call. We do have a category that is a dicey one. So first off, we're going to add
if
a point
you
for
don't
having
give it this. I'm going to be pissed, by the way.
So, that's a lot of pressure. So first off, it gains a point for the Mrs. Robertson character. The older woman that is the sexual aggressor. It also gets a point for nudity in the first 5 minutes. Congratulations on one of the fastest. I think it's like 8 seconds or something in. There's 8 to 20 seconds in. There's nudity in this film. It does subtract a point for what we call problematic content. He repeatedly is a peeping Tom. He very probably sabotaged her car. And because he's 17, that's technically child porn we watched at the very end of this film.
And let's face it. I mean, he is always very handsy on the girl. And,
there's a lot of high pressure sex.
I think that actually that category for this movie, I think you could argue it's even worse than Nerds.
It's dicey. Yeah, it's got some dicey stuff in it for sure. And
he does go full Kevin Spacey on these bits.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
Yeah. It's this. You can make a good think piece off this when it comes out for its 30th anniversary DVD or Blu-ray edition.
Yeah.
All right.
So get for the quality of the woman.
So all of this. Oh yeah, I really. I enjoyed watching this in VHS quality. I would very much like to see it in Blu-ray quality. which brings us to a grand total of 47 out of 100. A little on the lower scale. congratulations, The Big Bet, for making it onto the charts, though, as we search for the ultimate B movie.
Now, for me, when I look at this movie, I, like, you know, as an older gentleman, to some degree, I wouldn't want to watch this movie that much right now. There are lots of ways to see boobies and see naked women. This is not necessarily the way I would choose to do it. But if there is one thing that I could do for myself as a 15, 16-year-old kid, I wish that I could introduce myself to The Big Bet at that age. Because I feel like this movie would be an absolute blockbuster for me at that age.
Oh, there's no question.
I would not give a rat's ass about the story, but you would just see all these beautiful women, and I just think from my 15-year-old self, this movie would be a total winner.
I don't know about a blockbuster. I would have busted something, though.
Yeah. A nutbuster, perhaps.
But, I'll tell you, I don't think Blockbuster would have carried this. It would have had that sticker that didn't let you rent it.
It would have been probably that's where the 76-minute one on YouTube you found. That was the Blockbuster cut.
And if you had done that, if you were able to get that to your teen and stuff, you'd be having a whole lot more sex now in prison.
All right. Okay. Well, next up on our Nerds, Jocks, and Preppy season, we're moving on to episode 5. And this one, I'm not sure the best way to say it. Is it HOTS or is it HOTS? But we are totally moving into the HOTS movie. And I am looking forward to it because I'm betting that there's some boobies in it.
Oh, I've seen it. Can't wait to talk about it.
All right. Well, that will be coming up in a few days from now where we talk about HOTS for you. All right. Jim, tell everybody where they can find us on the internet.
All right. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And please talk about your favorite B movies using the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Fantastic. Does anybody have anything else to add before we take this one home?
I just throw a thank you out to the We Talk podcast guys and for hosting this for us and letting, you know, they have a lot of good stuff there that I actually have discovered. I was making fun of them earlier, but not everything is shitty.
Not everything is shitty? All right. Well, I don't listen to their podcast, but I do appreciate the fact that they're letting us on their network.
Not everything's shitty is their mission statement, I think.
I would like to wish Brad a speedy recovery. He was not with us this evening.
That's right. Well, he's recuperating in Sacramento. So, you know, hey, that's okay. I wouldn't mind recuperating in Sacramento. But we all can't live the life that Brad leads. All right. Well, for Brad, for Jim, for Jack, and for Nick, I am 8th Dan Stanadu. Thank you for listening to Season 2, Nerds, Jocks, and Preppies of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!